God, I'm really excited for this episode.
I am too, Biscuit.
Arthur and then Lurtle and you first chatted with our guest, and it was a lot of fun.
It was fun. I had fun.
Of course, I was locked away in the kitchen because you were afraid I was going to bark. But I did listen to it later. I enjoyed it.
No, that's great. Well, we're happy to have you all back on Land and Live. Thank you to those that have listened. We just reached over 500 downloads.
That's fantastic. Let's drink.
Can't celebrate just yet.
Why not?
Well, because we have to introduce our guest. Please let me welcome ventriloquist from the UK, Steve Hewlett. Steve has lived a truly amazing career and continues to perform still today. And I'm very excited to share with you his story and how he got into this art. Enjoy.
Is it starting now?
Yep.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Landon Harvey. Welcome to Landon Live. And tonight, we have our first ventriloquist from the UK, Steve Hewlett. Steve, how are you doing tonight?
I made it. Hi, Landon. Do you know what I'm thinking when I'm watching that clip? I'm thinking, I've still got that suit. I've still got it. I can't get in it. And it's my goal in after lockdown to try and get back into that suit because I've turned into a chef and I've been eating all of the evidence.
I think everyone has.
Great to see you, Landon.
Oh, well, great to see you too. Let's just get right into it. What was your early inspiration in ventriloquism? Did you start off as a ventriloquist? What's your story?
I did. It's all I've ever done. So I was 12 years old. I was watching a television show in England. It was a British ventriloquist. And the only reason I sat down to watch it was because he lived 5 minutes from my house. So I sat down and it was a TV talent show. Like America's Got Talent, Britain's Got Talent, but it was called New Faces back then. And a ventriloquist called Jimmy Tamley won the whole show. He won the whole thing. And so I knocked on his door the next day on the way to school. I was 12 years old in 1987. And I said, will you teach me what you do? And he said, no, go away. No, he didn't. It was because it was on the way to school. And I did learn this in later years that you don't knock on an entertainer's door at 8 o'clock in the morning before you go to school. You wait till after school. I respect that now. He's got me back since. Because I became a godfather to his children, and he used to let them, when I used to stay over, he used to let them wake me up whatever time they wanted to. So he's got his own back. But Jimmy Tamley, I spoke to him yesterday. We're best of friends even today, and it's like 33 years ago since that moment. But so I was inspired by him. But just after he won New Faces, Ron Lucas came over to the UK, and he had a hit TV show for 4 years. Called the Ron Lucas Show, and yes. And I went to meet Ron. I got a little gift actually so because he had like 4 TV series over here. I was like really in awe of Ron Lucas because he was on every week. You know,
yeah.
I think it was like 6 episodes, and then there was like 4 seasons. And I got a little Scorch watch, which I treasure, which is
that's super neat.
Yeah, an amazing gift. He gave that to his friends back then, so. I think I got it from a friend of a friend of a friend of Ron. But so Ron Lucas and Jimmy Tamley really started me off inspiration-wise. Ron was the first ventriloquist I recorded. It was, you might not know this, Landon, but we had VHS recording tapes. There's no CDs or downloading.
Yeah, my parents say the same thing to me. They're like, we had this thing called a VHS tape. Yeah.
That's it. It was VHS or NTSC, I think you had over there. And so I recorded Ron Lucas. The first thing I recorded was him. And then the next week, there was another ventriloquist on this TV show with Jim Davidson called Wednesday at 8, and it was David Strassman. And then the following week, they had Jay Johnson. So I saw three top American ventriloquists.
Oh, those are some big names.
Yeah. And then I saw Willie Tyler, and it just went from there. I was just hooked. Whenever a ventriloquist was on, I would be hooked to the TV. And it's all I've ever done since 87. This is it.
Wow. Yeah. So did you ever have a real or formal job, or was it just ventriloquism from the moment you were?
I've always been working since I was 11, so I used to deliver newspapers, you know, and I was delivering them to the until I turned into a ventriloquist, and then I done my first show. I raised £8, which is about $12, for this charity, and I remember delivering the newspapers, but I sat down on the steps of someone's home one morning to see if I was in it, and I saw myself in the paper with my puppet, and I raised that $12, and I was over the moon. But I knew from that day, really, from 87, I knew I was going to be a ventriloquist. And so I went to school, I'd done talent shows, and then I started to do benefit concerts. And I got to age 17, and I worked in like a holiday center in the UK when I was 17. And I got to do my show once a week for that whole season in 1993. And then it was really just grafting after that. And the ventriloquist that taught me initially, Jimmy Tamley, I roadied for him for 10 years. So I learned everything you needed to learn to be a ventriloquist by watching him on stage. When he got to a room, he would say, "I need the lighting differently. That table down there are going to heckle me." He knew when it was going to be a bad night or what you had to do really to make the show work for you, you know.
Sure.
And if he had a tough night, we'd drive home for the 3 hours or 2 hours, and he'd talk me through what went wrong or what went right or why he had the room in the palm of his hand. You know, it was invaluable lessons for a 12-year-old up until I was 22. I roadied for him, and he said, "One day you can take over driving," you know, because I wasn't old enough to drive. And then I think I drove him a couple of times, and then I turned professional and left him. Then he had a son, and his son took over, and he was even cheaper than me. So that was good. Yeah.
Wow. That's phenomenal. Are there any, aside from Jimmy, did you have any other people that inspired you that inspired some of your characters, maybe, or inspired you the way that you thought about your writing process for your characters?
Yeah, I didn't really start writing until I got into my mid-20s, I guess. But there was another ventriloquist called Keith Harris, who he had a record. This is the record. In 1982, Keith and Orville. So this little green duck was mega famous over here. And I done my first TV show with Keith Harris when I was 16 years old, and he stood behind the camera and he watched me. And when I finished my spot, he took me to one side and said, any advice that he gave me on that. I just remember, you know, I really learned a lot by watching people like Keith Harris. But when they stand behind the camera and watch you and give you advice, you never forget that. He was always on the phone to me to see how I was over the years, you know. And when I turned professional, he was there. And when I got married as well, I got married in Las Vegas, and he sent me some dollars, you know, to gamble with. It just became, a lot of ventriloquists just become your friends. You know, it's such a great community because they did become really close, you know. Keith Harris, Jimmy Tamney, Ron Lucas, they were really good to me, and I never forget that. And I'm hoping I've paid them all back sort of in my own way over the years, because I've put shows on, you know, which have involved all three of them since then. So, I really respect the generation that paved the way for us younger ones, you know.
Yeah, totally. That's phenomenal. What was your first character when you started out? And do you have that character? Do you still use it today, or has it evolved into a new character?
I had a little plastic character with ginger hair. Then I had a little wooden character called Freckles. So these little characters I stopped using, really. And when I got to the age of 22, I discovered Verna Finley. Now, Jimmy Tamley put me in touch with Verna, and I just ordered this ginger little redhead girl called Tiny Tina. She was really one of my first main characters when I was 16.
Okay,
and
wow.
I was a big Michael Jackson fan as well. So I wrote to Verna. You couldn't just email Verna. You had to write to her and wait for 2 weeks. And then you wait another 2 weeks for the reply. And then she'd say, "Steve, I got your letter. I'll start work on that character." And then another 4 weeks later, you get another reply to say, "I've started on the character."
Yeah.
You know, emails are a blessing, aren't they?
They are.
Verna's a legend, isn't she? So she made me a Michael Jackson puppet, which I used in 93 when I was 17 years old. And it was quite bad timing, really. If you Google 93, Michael Jackson's choose your characters wisely. So I used Verna about four or five times. She made me about five characters, and then I believe Marianne Taylor took over her work.
Yeah.
And then I got about five characters from Marianne Taylor, and Mary's wonderful. And so I always wanted a Selberg as well. So I saved up for a Selberg, and I got myself one. I've only used it twice in the show, but I don't use wooden characters. I'm not really. I'm more into the Muppet style at the moment. Yeah. You know, I've got a few
of more manipulation out of it sometimes.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. But when I, I'm backtracking again, but when I was 20, Keith Harris, who had the duck, you know, he gave me a puppet called Pongo. And so I kind of inherited a character from him, and it's Pongo the Skunk, it's called. And it's still in my act 25 years later, because it's quite a hit with the audience. Actually, it's wife's favorite. Yeah.
It's a beautiful character. Yeah.
Have you seen Pongo?
I have. I've seen photos of him.
He's quite big. He's quite a big character.
And the Michael Jackson, I want to comment on the Verna characters that you have. I've seen the Michael Jackson, and as a soft puppet builder, it's very hard to get something that looks like even close to like a caricature of a celebrity. Yes. That it's hilarious. It's really...
It's really brilliant. What she done was the actual... because I went to see him do a concert in Wembley in London in 93, I think it was. Yeah. And... no, I think it's about 1990 or something. But she actually made the gold outfit that he wore as well. It was the outfit that she made that impressed me more than anything. It just made it look incredible, you know. It looked completely real. It's quite scary the way it looked. The thing is, sadly, I'm no Terry Fator. I'm not a singer. I'm gutted. I can't sing. But I know that enhances your acts and your repertoire. But I wish I had those voices, but I had the Michael Jackson puppet just because I was a Michael Jackson fan. So I got him made, and I just done some jokes with him. I wrote some topical humor. So you're talking about the style of humor I write for them. So the Michael Jackson really was around, it was around his nose. You know, there was jokes going about his nose and picking his nose and things. it just fit that character at the time. Sure. But the news surrounding him was a little bit more tricky, so I had to drop him from the show eventually.
Yeah. That's knowing your audience and when your material is dated. But it's an interesting thing. I also think that having a character, and I'm sure you felt this as well when you introduced the Michael Jackson Verna character into the show. And I'm sure that Terry has also recognized this. But when you have a character that's a celebrity, you don't have to have jokes that have to set up who the character is, because the audience is able to click from the moment you bring him out. So that's neat.
Sorry, you're cutting out a bit there. It may be my internet. Is it... quite far away, and I'm quite far away from Dallas. Sorry, we do that question again.
Oh, I was just saying that having the character that was Michael Jackson is a lot easier to, when you bring it out, the audience immediately knows who it is. You don't have to have any type of setup to establish the character, which is probably also helpful.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't need to say, hi, I'm Michael Jackson, or this is Michael Jackson. It was Michael Jackson. So I should have brought him out and then give him a Dallas accent or give him an Australian accent and completely confuse the audience. It might have been funnier if I rather than Michael Jackson. It could have been LaToya Jackson or Janet Jackson. It probably was.
Could you talk a little bit about Britain's Got Talent and how that came to be?
Yeah, well, I've been in the business for about 17 or 18 years already. And so I was just starting to make a name for myself in the business. I started to, I'd done this thing called Educating Archie. It was an old ventriloquist on the radio and in the 1950s. And in 2006, I actually co-wrote a play called Re-Educating Archie. And so I played a ventriloquist, but we had the original dummy from the old show. So it kind of got me in the papers a little bit and a little bit on the radio. So my name started to get a little bit more known, but I hadn't had any big TV breaks or anything. I was doing cruise ships and over here we do pantomimes. So I did that and I done private concerts, you know.
But could you explain that? What are pantomimes?
Pantomimes, it's when... men dress up as ladies and wear tights and makeup, and it's like Cinderella. You got Cinderella, the story, or Aladdin, the story. It's we do this at Christmas, every Christmas. It could be Puss in Boots. It's always a famous story, like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. So it's a nice story. You kind of know the beginning and the end. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And you actually get like someone playing Snow White. You get seven dwarfs in the pantomime. So it's a comedy play. It's very slapstick. But it's very British tradition. It's a great thing over here. And they always had a ventriloquist in it, you know. So I was always going to be in work at Christmas time. I've only done 11 pantos, but there's many ventriloquists that have probably done about 40 or 50. But sometimes at Christmas, I like to do a variety show instead of panto. So I choose to do most of my act, really. When you do panto, you get to chop up your act and do it within the story, you know, because it's like Snow White, the Seven Dwarfs. Mm-hmm. You can come out and entertain the dwarfs in the house or at the wedding at the end with Snow White or Cinderella gets married. So you entertain at the wedding at the castle, you know, at the party, the after show party. But you have to do all the dancing. You have to do the acting. So the ventriloquist and my character, for instance, if it was Aladdin, I had Pongo and we were called Ping and Pong. We were the Chinese policemen. So we would play policemen and we'd have to, chase Aladdin around the stage for a couple of hours in a pair of tights, and that was fun. And I've done Aladdin for about five times. I love Aladdin. That's a good it's a good story. So that's panto.
Has being in that helped your career, or was it more like a fun thing to do that kept you working at the time?
Pantomime, you mean? Mm-hmm. It's pantomime. You always get a big name at the top. There's always someone famous from television over here mainly. But very recently, they started to bring stars over, like Pamela Anderson and David Hasselhoff have come over to do pantomime as well, you know. So you get quite a few big names over here doing it now. It's big business, really big business. And so pantomime was always good, but I hadn't had a TV break in my career. And I started when I was 12. I was now 37, and it was 2013. I do a lot of cruise ships. So after pantomime, which I just finished, I thought I'm going to have a few months off because we had a new baby at the time. And so I took some time off. Then I had a phone call from Britain's Got Talent. And they called me for 7 years running. I'd always turned it down because I was always working. I was always on ships. And so this time I had a few weeks off. So they said, well, if you want to come and audition, it's at the London Palladium, famous theatre. Which I loved because I worked there when I was 20 for 9 months. So I thought, I'll go back there. I went there and you see the audition on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It went from 6 minutes to 20 seconds. That's all they showed. But there was a standing ovation. Okay. only got my word for it. There was. And then, so it just went phenomenal. So, I went along, done the audition and it went great. I got through to the show. And because they only show 20 seconds, I think on a show like that, you have to have something up your sleeve for the live shows. And so I got on the live shows with other characters. I wanted to use Pongo, but they didn't want to see Pongo. They wanted Arfalaga back again. So they wanted to see my, they wanted to see my character that I auditioned with.
Okay.
So I thought, I'll bring him back again, but I need to add something. I can't just do Arthur Lager. So I thought I'm going to have something up my sleeve. And I didn't tell the producers that I had another puppet planned. But this was my Verna Finley character. He was called Butch. And he had muscles and he had some shorts on and a suit. Mm. And I used to do this with the Verna Finley character. He had a suit, but it was Velcro. She made it so it was Velcro. And I pulled a suit and then he was in his gym shorts.
Yeah.
And so he's standing there like half naked. It was hilarious at the time. I've done that on another TV show, but he was sat there for 10 years because I dropped him from the act. Mm-hmm. And my wife, Nina, said, you should change that puppet because it looks a little bit like Simon Cowell. So I sent him to a puppet designer and he changed it and he made it look like Simon Cowell. So gave him a fake sunburn, gave him the hair and the glasses and the suit. And he sent it back 2 weeks later, 1 week before the shows went
live. Wow.
Very fine line. That was nerve-wracking. But it turned up and I laughed a lot when I saw it. My wife was smiling. So I thought, well, I'll just take it along and see what happens. So we've done the last rehearsals for the show. And I still didn't mention the Simon Cowell puppet. I'd done the Arthur Lager. And then we went to the live shows the next day. There was one more rehearsal. And literally two hours before we went live, I done my last little rehearsal. But I thought, okay, I'm going to do it here, because I can't surprise them on the night, because they might cut my act. So I'd done Arthur Lager. And I pulled out the Simon Cowell puppet in the last rehearsal. And the place went crazy. They went mad. Wow. So just because they didn't know I had that in the box. So the producer ran down. And
did
they said,
you have an audience during this? I mean, was there
only the crew?
Only the crew. Okay.
Yeah, the crew and the other acts that were watching.
Gotcha.
And the hosts that are called Ant and Dec, that they doubled over laughing. So I thought, I need to do this tonight. The producer said, please put that in tonight. Simon will love it. And going on a show like that as a professional act is a big risk.
For anybody,
you know, anyone that's been doing it for like 15, 20 years. So I did put my life on the line, really. But also getting a puppet made up of the actual boss of the show is probably going to double ruin you, I think. I was extremely brave doing it.
Yeah.
But when I pulled out the Simon Cowell puppet, it just seemed to work. And when they panned to Simon's face, you saw the reaction. It was great. And I'd done it again a week later when I pulled out his ex-girlfriend. It wasn't even his girlfriend, but Sunita, the other character in the final that you showed earlier.
Yes.
She was in the audience, sat behind Simon. So because they were there, it made the impact bigger in the studio. It was electric in the studio.
So she was his ex-girlfriend at the time?
Sunita, yeah. Yeah, he's friends with all of his ex-girlfriends. I'm not saying he's got a lot, but he's got a lot. And so it was just extra funny because they were panning to the puppet and then to Simon and then to Sunita's puppet and then to Sunita. And their reaction actually gave my act, the end of my act, an extra 2 minutes of laughter because it was just so funny to them. It was so funny.
Yeah.
If they weren't in the audience, I don't know if it all worked as much. And you take that scenario out of the show, the Sunita and the Simon Cowell puppet, it's not really as funny. They have to be in the audience for it to work, I think.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, totally.
And it did work, yeah, in the end.
Wow. What was it like? So had you tested, I assumed you had tested the material, but what was that like writing for it? And did you get the puppet and then write for it? Or had you written the bit that you were doing with the Simon Cowell character and then you got the puppet?
I got the puppet made and then I panicked. Which is what I always seem to do. I always seem to do that. So I got the Simon Cowell. Obviously, I wrote this especially for the show. So I wrote a few gags. And if you look back at the first live show that I do, I only say one line with Simon. And it's all what I planned. It was just the impact of the puppet that was hilarious. And all he says was his famous line was, I did not like it. I absolutely loved it. So I knew that that's all I had to say to get the audience on my side. And so I said that and I got them on my side. And then I didn't get through that night, but then I got the wild card, which brought me back for the final the next time. So if there is a ventriloquist going on, all I'll say is just have something planned, but surprise the producers as well, because you can't go on and just do your vent act. I think these days you need something. I've seen that John Pizzi has gone on there. John Pizzi.
Yes.
It's fantastic what he done on there. He really, you know, it was just a nice twist to ventriloquism. Terry Fater's gone on there and done the same. It's just truly beautiful what Terry done, and Darcy Lynn. It's great if you can come out and do something different. I loved what Michael Paul done on it as well. Michael's great. He's a great stand-up comic, isn't he, Michael?
He is. He's phenomenal. And what I'll say, I don't know if this is the same, this works the same way for Britain's Got Talent, but for AGT, you could be a hilarious act, but sometimes your comedy isn't right in their platform because of like what you said, where you have to be quick and it has to be like bam, bam, bam versus, you know, comedy that builds on itself. Or if you have a character that wants to pan to the audience or talk to the audience, it builds. And, you know, you can't have that.
An act does build. When you've got 2.5 minutes, you haven't got time to build anything. No. So you have to be visual. You have to be really slick. And I was always ready for ad libs as well when I went on the show. So if there's, you know, but I was quite overwhelmed with the reaction. So I'm quite a shy person as it is, you know. I think many ventriloquists are quite shy, but I've always been really shy. So without the characters, I'm kind of a little scared, a scaredy cat. But yeah. I'm really good at ad-libbing, actually, in certain moments. I don't think I was on BGT. I stuck to my script, which is very unlike me. Apart from the Simon Cowell puppet, which I pulled out. But I mean, it was actually a puppet maker that saved me on that show, Peter Pullen.
Yes.
Because I was only told on the Monday that I'd got through to the finals. So I had to phone up a puppet maker, and you'll appreciate this, Landon. You need more than a week to make a puppet. I gave Peter Pullen 3 days to make Sunita, and he didn't sleep. He made her in 3 days, and he saved me on that show because the impact of her coming out was incredible. So it's down to us ventriloquists can't work without you builders. You're our lifeline, you know. So I thank you for doing that because it's incredible what you do for us. Yeah, we need great builders.
On behalf of all builders, thank you so much. That's amazing. No, three days. I mean, I can build a puppet in a week if I have a crunch time, but 3 days is, man. Not to mention the fact that you have to draw up the character and then pick what, you know, the whole appearance and everything else.
Well, they had to order all the pieces, the wigs and the clothes. And I mean, Sunita was famous for having the leaves on her. So where did you find those leaves? I know, but they found them. The eyes, everything. He didn't have anything there, like the material for Sunita, and the shoes as well. It just looked like her when it came out. That's why she was in hysterics. But I had to thank him. I always thank him for that. I always remind him that he saved me on that show. It was a beautiful thing. Really good.
Yeah, he does beautiful work. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, I love Peter. I mean, he's been working for 50 years on for ventriloquists. There's so many. I'm writing a book called Ventriloquist, and I interviewed Pete, and I didn't realize how many he made. He made so many for vents over here. Mm-hmm. Literally loads. And it will be in my book. You'll see that.
Wow. I'm looking forward to that. Do you have a date that you plan to release it? Or is it still in the works?
I want to. I'm hoping that this situation we're all in doesn't hold it back. But I'm hoping to launch it at Kentucky next year. That's my dream. So
yeah, that'd be phenomenal.
Yeah, it would be. That is my dream. So I really hope, I hope to finish it by the end of the summer this year and start the editing and publishing and things. So fingers crossed, but it's the biggest thing I've ever done. I've been writing it for about 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it about the history of ventriloquism or your story or what's
it's about people behind the dummy. I like to get to know people, you know? So I wanted to get to know Willie Tyler. So I've spoken to Willie Tyler. Ron Lucas has done the foreword for my book. He's my idol, so I couldn't have asked anyone else. So, Ron's in the book. I've interviewed him, Dave Strassman, Jay Johnson, Paul Zerdin, Nina Conti, Jimmy Tamley, who taught me. I mean, name a ventriloquist, most of them are in the book. So I've done interviews with vents like yourself, but all over the world as well, in India and Iceland and it's fascinating actually how many there are out there because you don't, unless you delve like we do, you don't realize, you know. Try ask somebody normal to name five ventriloquists. It's quite a tricky, but we can read off 100, couldn't we? if we do a quiz, we'll do well.
And one of the things I love about the Ventriloquist Commission in Kentucky is that we have this international show, and it allows us to see how ventriloquism is performed all over the world.
It's amazing
it's so different and so inspiring. And, you know, you leave the convention with creative juices flowing and new ideas, and most people leave with a new puppet too. It's just phenomenal. Phenomenal. We talked a little bit about Peter Pullen and Verna and Marianne. I'd like to kind of quickly touch on the evolution of your main character, Arthur.
Yes.
Could you talk about how he came to be and the character and the actual puppet?
Yeah. In 2005, I had this Werner character called Butch. I dropped him from the show because I had a manager at the time, and he said, you should get an old man in the show. And I think these days ventriloquists have, they either have an old man, a monkey, a baby, and a mask. That's our act, isn't it? That's what we've all got. That.
Yeah.
And so I thought, yeah. Okay, well, I haven't got a monkey. I haven't got a baby. I don't do the mask, but I'll get an old man. So I got the old man at the time. It was about 15 years ago now. And yeah. A mate of mine called him Arthur. He said, you should call him Arthur Lager. I laughed at that. So I thought, if I'm going to laugh at it, the audience will laugh at just me introducing him. So, and they still do. So I called him Arthur Lager, and I put him in the act. I was doing a hotel in Turkey, and bearing in mind, a few nights before, I was using the Werner character, but I dropped him to see how the old man would go down, and he went down a storm. I'd never heard any laughter like it. But he was doing the same material that the younger character used to do.
Yeah.
But I made him more cheeky, and he had more of an old, he's just like a dirty old man.
Yeah.
And it worked. And everybody can relate to him. He's like your granddad, your uncle, your next door neighbor. You know, it's a character that people really love. And I just haven't let him go since. He has grown. And you say evolution. Mm-hmm. Strangely, I started a show just before lockdown on the March the 11th. I had the idea about 5 years ago, but I wanted to have a puppet made up of Arthur Lager when he was a child. So I wanted to build up his whole life in 1 hour. So I wrote a new show called Arthur Lager Gets Real. I contacted Marianne Taylor and her company, and they made me a couple of Arthur Lagers. So I've got a 23-year-old Arthur Lager, a 40-year-old Arthur Lager, and a 60-year-old Arthur Lager, and I've got the 82-year-old Arthur Lager, and I'm getting Peter Pullen's actually making me a 7-year-old Arthur Lager, so I've got five characters. And I loved it. I opened up the show. It was the last show that I did on stage. Mm-hmm. And it was just purely just about him. Mm-hmm. So, but it's more like a play, you know. It's I think David Strassman's inspired me with this.
Yeah, sort this of is thing. A production.
It is a production. He's mm-hmm. an incredible performer, Strassman. I love his work. And so I like the fact that it's more of a performance, and it's not me doing cabaret or a show, you know, or an act. And this is something Ron Lucas taught me, actually. He says, when I'm on stage, I don't do an act. I do a show. And there is a difference, isn't there, between the two. And I like that. I like what Ron Lucas said there. But now I've got an act and I've got a show now. So I went out and done this in March. The first hour of the show was actually the Arthur Lager Gets Real. And the second half was the rest of my characters, where I'd just done a cabaret show. Mm. But the play, I've only done it twice because we went into lockdown. But I've moved all of the tour dates to next year now. But I can't wait to get back on stage because it worked. It was, do you know, when you get a dream or an idea, this is like a whole hour that I wrote, and you feel so proud putting on something brand new. And I knew it was a good idea, but you don't know until you put it on stage whether it's going to work. And I love your reaction to it about Arthur Lager.
Oh, it's hilarious.
In different stages, you know, you could do anything with it.
Yeah, it's got so much potential. Now I've got to ask, does it start with the current version of him and he's looking back, or does it start with the baby? Yeah. Okay, wow.
Very good. So we opened with the show, and actually the first night was slightly different to the second night. So I started with him, and then we went into a moment where he was going to look back, and then he was a baby, then he was born, then he was the 7-year-old, then he just grew up, you know. So like every 8 minutes I would change the character, but there'd be a screen with some date changes and things on there and some backdrops. And there, at one time he was working with the Beatles when he was in his 20s. So you play some Beatles music. It's a nice little link.
Yeah.
And I wrote some gags around that time in Liverpool. And then he was a stand-up comic for a while. And then then he joined me, you know, as a ventriloquist dummy later on. But it's such a nice piece to do, actually. I'm going to tour it for years because it's a huge passion to do something brand new in it. And I think it went down better than my act I've been doing for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And my wife said she loved it. The contrast between the two shows was, it was like a play and then it was a comedy show afterwards. Yeah. But, so the first night was different to the second because my wife said, I think you should probably do a little bit more comedy before the show starts. So what I did in the cabaret show, I brought Arthur Larker back to do my main act with him, and my wife Nina said it doesn't work. You've lost the essence of Arthur Larker, bringing him back. It's too much, you know. So now I've separated him. I just do the Arthur Larker show in the first hour, and the second hour is just those characters. But the second night I went back, I started with him, started to do some cabaret and introducing him to a lady in the audience. And then every time he came back as an older character, he would recognize the lady in the audience and he'd say, "Hey, you were here 7 years ago." And it was a running gag. But I wrote that just by my wife saying, change that little part to it. And it became quite a big part of the evening. It was hilarious by the end. But I rewrote the show the second night, and so I can't wait to get it back because it was a dream to do. It's really nice.
I love the originality and that idea. I'm curious, did you write the entire show, or did you write it as you got the versions of the puppets?
I wrote the show before I got all the puppets. Marianne Taylor's Matt Puppets made three of the characters for me. And so, it was just brilliant. I just couldn't wait to get the characters. And do you know when they send you pictures of your character? And do you make all of your own, or you don't send yourself pictures when you make?
I do now. I get to a point where I put the eyes in it and it clicks with me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just brilliant when it all starts coming together and your vision ends up on stage or on a piece of paper. And then you get on stage. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing from birth to stage, you know? And that's what I want to
do. It's a new level of excitement.
Yeah. It's exciting, isn't it? It's an idea that just manifests into something beautiful like comedy. And I saw something recently in lockdown during watching Jeff Dunham and him building a character in lockdown. And then have you seen the results since?
Yes, I have.
It's incredible. He's such an inspiration, Jeff.
Yes.
Because he doesn't just build helicopters and dummies. He's a great stand-up comic. Brilliant, yes. Brilliant vent. But Jeff was at the top 25 years ago, you know, when I was starting out, Jeff was one of the greats because he was doing all the Montreal comedy festivals. That's when I first saw him in the late 80s. I saw him on TV over here, and he was at the top then. You know, for British events, we were like, wow, who is this guy? And then it took him another 25 years to just, the YouTube took off, didn't it? It's incredible.
It is. It is amazing. And it's amazing that he's, you know, you can't imagine how hard he's worked to stay on the top since then.
I know, yeah.
His marketing department and, you know, it's all in who you come to contact with and who you know, your branding, and it's, oh my gosh. And of course all of his touring all over the world that he's doing. Truly amazing. Could we meet Arthur?
You can, yes. I've got to wake him up. And if you know, it's 2 a.m. over here. So yeah. My whole family's asleep. I probably sound like I'm whispering, but he's what now? Yes, now. Can I just ask you, Landon, why are most of the great ventriloquists from Texas? What is what's going on with Texas?
I don't know, but they've all done, they've all performed for a year at the Six Flags over Texas, which is an amusement park. So I have to do that next summer.
Are you doing it?
I plan to. I'm going to try to. So we'll see.
Well, if it works.
It is ironic.
Yeah, you're on the list. Oh, hello. Where are we?
Yeah.
1, 2, 1, 2. hello, London. All right. No, it's not London. It's Landon. It's Landon. I thought you said we were going to London. Oh, hello.
Hello there. How are you,
Landon? You all right?
I'm doing well. Yeah, we're having a great interview with Steve here. And I'm sorry we had to wake you up. I know it's
late. Well, he's nothing without me.
Well, yeah. I'm sure that's true. I mean, I did see your appearances on Britain's Got Talent. You were phenomenal, by the way, so I wanted to just tell you that in person.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, what's an eye? What's good, an eye?
Yeah, you were great. And you're a hit with the ladies, too. What is your, have you always been a hit with the ladies? Is
that the natural, you know. I'm such a natural, yeah. It's in the eyes. Yeah, the ladies do have his eyes, yeah.
He's got
a little bit of work done since BGT, though, you know. Yeah, he does some work done on his face. Oh, mm-hmm. Get some work done, did I? Yeah. Well, on a celebrity, did I? On a hussy.
Yes, since you've had the work done, Arthur, he looks it's great because he's got these beautiful eyes that can be seen from far away. You know, he's got, you know, when you move his mouth, it's great for any type of production that you were to perform.
Yeah. That's why I use these big characters, these Muppet style characters, because you can't see their mouths moving. You know,
yes.
I can see yours moving. It's just it's really early in the morning, so that's why I think. I mean, with the hard figures, you know, it's kind of difficult to see those little lips, the leather lips moving, which I used to use one of those when I was a kid, but I started to do bigger venues and. Me and Arthur Lager, we worked at the London Royal Albert Hall, which is like about 6,000 seats. So you need bigger characters, you know, for those sort of venues and theatres over here.
For sure.
They could be quite big, you know, so when you're doing tours and things. So it's good. It's good to see the mouth moving and things.
Yeah,
isn't it? Great. One, two.
And I love, he's just got such an original look that is, you know, super.
Yeah, he's very cheeky. He's got his summer outfit on now. Do you like it, Landon? There it is. There you
go. Great. I love it. Oh, I love the shorts. Those are great.
Summertime here, isn't it? Yeah. It's summertime. We don't know if we're allowed out, but on in lockdown. Yeah, on in lockdown. I've been in lockdown for years. You're stuck in the trunk.
I think all of us performers are dressing up just to walk around the house and perform in the mirror.
Yeah, trying out new shoes.
Yeah,
this is it. So, I mean, a lot of my characters are in storage, actually. Mm. So, we're not going anywhere. Going nowhere. So, yeah. Oh, there you go. Who does your hair?
mine is real. I don't know if yours is, Arthur. But
well, it used to be. The hairs up the nose are. They're mine. Oh. Yeah. I use a toothbrush to brush them.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. He's quite heavy, actually. He's got quite a heavy character. He's got a heavy head because the eyes, actually, I think whatever the eyes are made out of, they're quite heavy inside there because they're real eyes. Yeah,
they're super great for like promotional shots and, of course, to be seen far away. Thank you, Arthur, for waking up and being part of the show.
Thanks. I got that asleep. I just wish I could close the eyes. I can't close the eyes. See you later.
All right. Bye-bye. That's fantastic. Well, Steve, what is one of your favorite show memories and one of your maybe not so favorite or something went wrong and you're like, now I learned from that?
I'm just trying to think things that could go wrong. You could be heckled sometimes where things go wrong. I did have somebody who was extremely intoxicated during one of my shows and it was a New Year's Eve, actually. It was quite a long time ago, but they walked up onto the stage. And there was security there, but the security were just laughing and they just let this happen. So they walked up onto the stage and they just started shaking my character and it was on my arm. But I think some people, when you have a drink, you can't believe that they're puppets, you know, because they thought the character was real and they were shaking it and they were talking to the puppet, you know, but I think they were so drunk. They didn't know what they were doing. Have you heard this story before? This ventriloquist called Terry Rogers. She was on stage once and a drunk person walked up onto the stage and was arguing with the character. And it got so angry, it went to punch. I mean, Terry went back like this because she thought he was going to punch her. But he actually went for the dummy and he punched the dummy's head and it came out of the socket. It was a wooden character. And the dummy's head flew across the stage But just as it done that, because she's very quick thinking, Terry was, she made it go, wah! You know, she done the voice as he flew away across the stage.
Oh, wow.
Which is funny. Very funny. Yeah, she's brilliant. Terry Rogers, great event. Great show memories, really, for me was coming over to America to work in Branson, Missouri. I worked at the Moon River Theater with Jimmy Osmond and his brothers. Mm-hmm. That was truly incredible. That was in 2016 and 17. And I met up with a couple of fellow vents. So we had Todd Oliver came. Yes. He came with his mum. And Jay, just trying to think. There's a couple of Jim Barber came. And this was quite funny because I noticed that when the Osmonds had friends in the audience or entertainers from the strip, they would always acknowledge that they were there. And so I wanted to be professional, right, one night. I knew Jim Barber was in the crowd. Yeah. So I come on and do my set. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to acknowledge one of my heroes, the great ventriloquist, Mr. Jim Barber. And so Jim stood up and took a bow. And the audience, you know, gave him a lovely round of applause. That was so sweet. And he sat down. I finished my act and introduced the Osmonds. Mm-hmm. And the Lennon sisters, a very famous American group, were on next. Yep. And then they came out. And I was in the dressing room and I heard the Lennon sisters say, "We have a friend in the audience tonight. His name is Jim Barber. Please stand up, Jim." And I heard the audience cheering for Jim Barber, and he had to stand up again.
Oh,
and so they were applauding. And so I'm in the wings to the show, and then Jimmy Osmond is on stage, and the lights go up. I thought, oh, what's going on now? And he says, "I'd like to acknowledge a friend in the audience tonight." And I thought, oh no, did he not hear me? And he went, "Jim Barber, would you stand?"
Oh,
he stands up for a third time. So Jim's up. Jim got more applause than I did that night. And I was working. But Jim deserved it. He's a great vent. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really do cherish other ventriloquists. I respect great vent acts, you know, original great vent acts that pave the way for us. And just, you know. They're brilliant. It's such a great art that we're in. It's fantastic. Yeah, that's why the vent convention is brilliant to go to, because you get to see something brand new all the time. When I was there, I saw Nick Paolo, you had on your show recently.
Yes.
And I remember Nick specifically because he had this caveman. I was in hysterics. He was brilliant. He's fantastic. You always remember the greats, you know. That's good. This is something that I had Stephen Hewlett. It's got no date on it, but it must have been in the early, I think it's 1990, North American Association.
Yeah, the NAAV. Wow.
Yeah, but look how many members there are. 20,744.
That's amazing.
Really? There's about four now, isn't there?
I don't know. I know we have the IVS. It's run by Tom Crowell. That's phenomenal.
A brilliant Tom, and they just change the letters every year, don't they?
They have a new member card every year. They're making some great content, and it's neat because even if you don't go to the convention, you kind of see what everyone's up to, and you're able to be inspired through, the online newsletters, which is always great. But the convention, what I love about the convention, and the first year I got to go, I was so excited. I won the Terry Fader Scholarship, which is the only reason why I got to attend, because my parents wanted me to work for it. And
congratulations. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a neat experience. But I got to meet Jim Barber and talk with him and get pictures with him. And it's just such a great community that fosters young talent, you know, and everyone's so willing to share and to help. And it's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I met Jimmy Nelson there in 2003, and that was incredible. Bless him. That's why I met Kelly Asprey. I've got my book here as well. Kelly Asprey, we sadly lost last week. Who wrote that book? Jimmy Nelson, Jeff Dunham signed that book. A few of them signed that, actually. Can we do an auction? Yeah. So that's just an incredible book. But it was a wonderful place. I was 28 when I went, and it was the 100th birthday of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. I remember Alan Seamock played W.C. Fields. And it was just a brilliant tribute show to Edgar Bergen. They put on about his radio show, you know. And yeah, they always make it special. Really do there at the convention. Mark Wade is genius, isn't he? Mark's fantastic.
I can't imagine all of the work that he does just to make the convention run so smoothly.
No, I think they're doing a online thing, aren't they, for one day this year? I believe
they are. Yes. Yeah, I have a. I'm doing a little puppet building workshop thing in it. Yeah,
that means I can go. So I'm going to be there.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about being original and creating characters or having them created, and share some tips on where you can go to create your own puppet while you're in quarantine. So I've been working on that. Yeah, a lot of fun. Wow,
that's a good idea.
Could you talk a little bit about comedy in the UK versus comedy outside the UK? Did you notice a difference when you started touring, or not really?
I do. When I went over to the States for the first time, Jimmy Osmond watched me the first night. And although I did get laughs, some people, he told me, asked me if I could slow down a bit. And so I wasn't driving home. It was literally the accent. You know, I was talking too fast when I'd done the show. Can you understand me now? I should have asked you earlier. Yeah. Yes, sir. So Jimmy said, can you just slow down a bit? They loved the content. They loved what you did, the visual stuff, but just slow down. And the second night I went out, I slowed down what I was doing, which means I do longer, surely. He didn't want that. But he loved it. So the second night, and from then on, I just tried to, respect your audience and just sort of learn by it. So you just have to go by what they need. And so, yeah, it was just really just changing a few words in my act that would suit, you know, you talk about the obvious pavement and sidewalk and things, but sure. There's only a few words that I changed. I don't talk about the sidewalk or pavement, so I didn't need to.
Right.
It's different. But I've always loved American comedy, you know, Seinfeld. We always watched Friends over here, so all those sitcoms. Robin Williams, I love. Great comedians, Steve Martin, Stephen Wright. Yeah. Lots of people called Stephen. It's really funny. But a lot of my humor, really, I think it just watching American ventriloquists for 30 years now. But when I was in my teens, I was just watching American comedy most of the time. I love that style of comedy. You know, I get it. I really get American humor. Saturday Night Live and all that. It's just fantastic. So, and this is brilliant for me. I've never been interviewed in America before. So this is like my late, late show, really.
Yes,
this is my early, early show.
This is like Landon Live late, late at night.
Late, late and early, early for me. So it's an honor to be on your show, mate. But I was always watching American comedy. I love it. But over here, we're just very laid back. In England, I think it's can be quite difficult. I've done so many ships, American ships, where there's American audiences in. And my act has got different reactions in different places, which is really throws you when you're used to doing the same show in the UK. And the Americans would laugh at you differently, and the Canadians would get different things, and they would applaud. Whereas normally I'd get a laugh somewhere, the Americans would applaud what I was doing. I thought, oh, wow. And then I have to learn to slow down again, because I was expecting a laugh. I wasn't expecting clapping there. It was supposed to be a laugh.
Yeah.
So, sometimes.
That really, wow. I'm curious. You talked about doing cruise ships. What was that experience like? And were you ready when you had started cruise ship work?
I was 22 when I done my first cruise ship, and I only had 45 minutes, but they said, oh, you might have to do a late night show, which is an extra half an hour. And all I had with me extra was a Michael Jackson puppet. I had no material for. I had 5 minutes with him. But he couldn't sing for 25 minutes because I couldn't sing. I should have just I should have mimed something at least. But so I went on that cruise ship and I had an okay 45 minutes because the cruise audiences are slightly different to the gigs at home. You get used to doing the cruise ships. They're very disciplined. And now they're in huge, beautiful theaters. And so when I go on them now, I'm ready. I love doing them because the theaters are packed and they're waiting for a show, you know. Whereas at home, sometimes in the UK, sometimes you have to fight for your audience. There's kids running about. There's fruit machines. It's like little mini Vegas casinos and things. The bar, sometimes the bars, you know, and the restaurants are in the same room as where you're performing. So you're fighting against a lot. But when you're on a cruise ship, they're always...
It's all controlled.
It is controlled, yeah. You've got your own sound guy, lighting guy. You got people in the wings helping you with your props and things, the curtains. You know, you're introduced properly. It's like you're in Vegas. You know, so it's like you got your own show when you do a theater. That whole night, that room is yours. You know, so it's fantastic. But it's every night is different on a ship. You don't know who's in the audience. You know, it could be half Spanish and half German. Sometimes they don't tell you.
Well, you talked about how the audience was different than that you were used to. Could you talk a little bit more about that and kind of define that?
How different they are?
Yeah, like how are they? How do they seem different to you when you perform on cruise ships?
In cruise ships because they're. I tell you for instance when they're dressed up, they call it formal evening. So when they're dressed up in their dicky bows and their suits and the ladies have got big night dresses on, you know, like they're at a ball or something, like Cinderella and all that, they've just had dinner or they're just going to dinner and they're coming to see a show first. Sometimes they do it other way around because you do two shows. So you do early evening and then late evening. But when it's formal evening, I think comedy acts have a tougher time because they're all sat there with their dicky bows and oops, there you go. Just do comedy and they love it. They love it if you do a visual slapstick. they're sat there and they're waiting for a show, but it's like I don't know, it's like you're on Broadway or in the West End when they're sat there in their suits. It's a completely different audience to when they're turning up in their shorts or their jeans. Because they're more relaxed, you know, and they're looking forward to a comedy show. I don't know what it is about the dicky bows or the, you know, the dresses that turn people into people with no sense of humor. But sometimes it's more tricky to entertain them when they're full up or they're wearing a wedding dress, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, maybe it's they're both too constricting, so it's harder to laugh. I don't know.
Maybe they can't breathe. Maybe that's what it is. So maybe I've been thinking they're laughing, but they're all choking. Possibly. So
that's phenomenal. That's interesting to hear your perspective on that. In kind of wrapping up here, could you talk about your hopes for the future of ventriloquism and for future events?
Yes. Well, hopefully the venues will come back soon. That's what we're hoping. I believe at the end of this month, I've got some bookings. And so we're hoping all that's going to go ahead. And I think the mask routine, I did do the mask for a while, but I've been trying to find an excuse not to do it anymore because many people over here do it. And so I've now got an excuse. I don't think we're allowed to do it. So I think for ventriloquism, I want to be doing my Arthur Lager show, the one I told you about. So I want to take that on the road and do some festivals around. We have Edinburgh Festival in Scotland. That's one of my goals to do. So it's to be more creative with my work. And I've got these characters made up from Matt Puppets for the Arthur Lager. I want to make that an actual thing that I'm known for now, something brand new that's just started this year. That would be great to actually get something. Yeah, I'd love to win an award for that. Maybe a Terry Fater scholarship or something. You could lend me yours. So
yeah.
I think for people like Terry Fater and the Got Talent franchise, I think ventriloquism is safe. I think there'll always be a vent that's going to bring something new to the show. You know, it's going to do something that's going to not shock us, but that's going to impress us. And when you see Evangelicals, you think that they're not going to have anything new, but they seem to always come out with something new, which is great. It's always good to see something that is fresh, innovative. Yeah, yes. That word. So innovative. That's yes. The word, isn't it? Edit it up until that point. That was good. And so I really do love seeing fresh and original ideas. And I like coming up with them. I've written loads of jokes and loads of routines and stuff, but you got to have the platform to do it. So theaters and possibly back on the cruise ships at some point.
Okay,
that's where most of the ventriloquists have been, I think. Yeah. up until this year. Mm-hmm. This year is a write-off for any performance. Yeah. I believe
it makes me wonder if in the future, because you know all these magic acts rely on people from the audience, if ventriloquism will be more popular on cruise lines, you know.
Yes. Well, I'm rewriting my show because I did have for the cruises, they asked if I could do the mask. And so I do pull it in the second show. But you're not going to be able to use people in the audience, at least for a year, I don't think. So I'm rewriting the show. So I've got two shows without any audience participation.